And we are indeed. We are Dads on the Air back on this third day of July 2012. And this week, for those who haven't been following this, it is NIDOC Week. NIDOC Week is the National Aborigines and Islanders Day Observance Committee.
It's NIDOC Week, and Dads on the Air pays its respect to the elders past and present of all nations and clans of First Peoples in Australia. And this morning it's Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and helping me on the panel today we have Bob Brown helping out once more. So it's a big thank you to Bob for helping us out on the show again today. So what have we got on our first show for NIDOC Week? We will be speaking with Rick Welsh, who is running a men's shed. He's part of the Sydney Aboriginal Men's Network, and he's also going to talk about strategies that are being developed for managing AVO-based jailing of Aboriginal men. Then later after that, we will be speaking to Uncle Gerald Brown. That's Uncle G, for those who know him. And Uncle G is going to be telling us all about some of the programs that he's got running in the Illawarra region. So it'll be great to hear from Uncle G. And we, as Bob might have mentioned a few minutes ago, we've got some great music to play. So looking forward to getting through all that in this big week. Don't forget, you can get us on our new web address, which is www.dadsontheair.com.au, where you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. So, just coming back to our theme today of NIDOC, the National Aborigines and Islanders Day Observance Committee. It runs the first week in July, the first full week of July. So this year it runs from the 1st to the 8th of July. And the theme for NIDOC Week 2012 is Spirit of the Tent Embassy, 40 Years On. This year's theme celebrates the champions who lived to renew the spirit of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples through the establishment of the Aboriginal Tent Embassy, and that was way back in 1972. It's amazing how many people now seem to have forgotten all about the Aboriginal Tent Embassy. But 40 years ago, the embassy became a powerful symbol of unity. Its founders instilled pride, advanced equality, and educated the country on the rights of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. So this week is an opportunity for Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians to join together to recognise the valuable contribution Indigenous people make to Australia's national identity. So we might just, as usual, go to a couple of news items. There's a bit of good news here. It was reported in the Sydney Morning Herald on the 28th of June, an article by Dan Harrison. The heading is House Passes Dad and Partner Pay. So under this this legislation that's now passed through the House, fathers and same-sex partners of new parents will get 2 weeks government-funded parental leave from next year, after the legislation passed through federal Parliament on the 27th of June 2012. The benefit will be paid at the rate of the national minimum wage of $606 a week before tax, and will also be offered to adopting parents. The benefit is available to full-time, part-time, casual, seasonal, contract and self-employed workers who have worked at least 330 hours in 10 of the 13 months before the birth of the child, and who earned $150,000 or less in the previous financial year. To receive dad and partner pay, a person must be on unpaid leave or not working at the time. So that's removing a little bit of the discrimination following the original introduction of that parent pay that was introduced for the mothers. Originally it was going to be for both partners, then it became the mothers. Now finally they've got it right, and they've passed this this new legislation to make fathers and same-sex partners of new parents eligible for the government-funded parental leave. Okay, and then we might mention there is another meeting of the group that runs the... it's the Domestic Violence Court Advocacy Service, run by Mario Leacher, a barrister at law, and he set up the new AVO service for principally for men who find themselves being charged with being charged with an apprehended violence order. Unfortunately, many people find themselves in this situation and haven't got the faintest idea what they should do, and it's very hard to get some information on that. So Mario is working to get over this problem. They will be having a meeting on Wednesday, the 25th of July, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. It will be held at the corner of Sackville and Delamere Street, Fairfield. It's opposite the Buddhist Temple. And the topic will be how to run a defence in AVO cases. There'll also be questions and answers on individual cases. So if you've got a particular problem you'd like to run it past Mario, make sure you're there. 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. corner, Sackville and Delamere Streets, Fairfield, opposite the Buddhist Temple. I should mention that registration is essential. So if you want to go to that, you should either go to the and send an email to this address, info@guiltynotguilty.com.au. That's info@guiltynotguilty.com.au. Or you could make a phone call to 97234581. So that's a great service being offered by Mario Leacher. There's an article here that we came across from the Adelaide Advertiser on the 27th of June. And in this article, Rebecca Devlin is the journalist who refers to the constant message from TV, movies and commercials that the portrait of men shown in those areas, TVs, movies, commercials, is all too frequently that men are cheaters, lazy, unreliable and stupid. She makes the observation that women folk are often referred to as the fairer sex, but perhaps blokedom should be labelled the unfair sex. She gives some examples here. TV shows are filled with father characters who are hopeless, uninterested, bumbling idiots. Who comes to mind? Phil of Modern Family. Homer Simpson. Right. Family Guy. American Dad. Shameless. Virtually any character played by Tim Allen or more lately William Shatner. Or sometimes the men are seen as the money tree. She gives examples there of Bruce in Keeping Up with the Kardashians or Jay in The Modern Family. And there are some ones, actually, it was a very charming ad, but there was an underlying message. You might remember those Telstra ads and why was the Great Wall of China built, and the poor old dad says to keep the rabbits out and gets away with it, but with a very charming young fellow. But if you think about it, that underlying message is the same old one. And if you can imagine if the characters were women, there would certainly be a stink. Because it's not okay to say these things about women, but it certainly seems to be okay to say these things about men. I think that the message is that equal means equal, and even if women in the past have been put down by men, it doesn't mean that the pendulum should swing completely the other way, and we shouldn't be doing to men what men did to women for all that length of time. Men are, so what happens is men get awfully confused. Should they pay the bill on the first date? Should they tell a work colleague that they look pretty today? Or is that going to be interpreted when it's written down and inspected and pored over by a court as someone going to say, that looks like sexual harassment? There are lots of examples like that where really it used to be men were strong, respected and dependable, but nowadays people are looking for ways to put them down. There's also been some developments in the international child abduction cases. This is something that we often talk about. There's some different thoughts on whether the abduction of children by a parent should be a criminal prosecution, or whether in fact that might make it more difficult to return the child after there has been an abduction. So some may see it as a double-edged sword. The risk is that some courts will see the possibility of criminal prosecution in the home country of the child as a reason not to order a child's return. This is despite the treaty obligations under the Hague Convention, which do oblige these other countries where a child may be abducted to return the child. But Unfortunately, even in Australia, we've had that recent case in Brisbane with the four children where somehow the courts didn't feel obliged to honour their obligations under the Hague Convention, and it's now been referred to the High Court for a hearing in August. And, look, unfortunately, that's frequently the case around the world. There's been some investigation in the US recently, and there've been findings there by the Congress that each year in the US several hundred children are kidnapped by a parent in violation of law, and until the mid 1970s, parental abduction was not considered a criminal offence. Since the mid-70s, United States criminal law has evolved such that parental abduction is now a criminal offence in each of the 50 states and the District of Columbia. For the purposes of any extradition treaty to which the United States is a party, Congress authorises the interpretation of the terms kidnapping with a 1P and kidnapping with a double P to include parental kidnapping. Unfortunately, there is no guarantee that a child will be returned by a foreign authority in connection with the extradition of the alleged wrongdoer, threatened with impending extradition. Unfortunately, abducting parents may hide the child or children with a friend or relative. For people that work in this area, I think the general consensus would be that criminal prosecution does provide advantages. It provides access to Interpol, among other things, and it gives more authority as far as getting the child back to the country where they come from, and complying with the laws of the family court in that particular country. If you want to find some more on this topic, and certainly in connection with the Hague Convention, the Hague Convention was signed on the 25th of October 1980. And if you just Google the Hague Convention, you can see which countries have signed up and what the obligations are. Okay, now we might go to a short music break before we get on with a few more stories. Now this song is Many Rivers to Cross. The singer is Jimmy Cliff. And this was featured in that recent telemovie Mabo on the ABC. Eddie Mabo, the central character in this film, said that this was one of his favourite songs, and it is a classic. And for people who are fighting the long fight to correct injustices and wrongs, and international parental child abduction comes to mind, this might be just the song to inspire you to keep up with the good work.
Time.
And that was Many Rivers to Cross by Jimmy Cliff, and that's in the soundtrack of the TV movie Mabo that was on the ABC recently. A great song. Now, moving on with a couple of other news items that have caught our eye. This was an article from the Cyprus Mail, again on the topic of abducted children. There was recently a... On Tuesday, actually, Tuesday of last week, a Ryanair flight from Paphos bound for Bergamo Airport in Italy was forced to return an hour after takeoff following information that one of the passengers had been kidnapped. Police informed the pilot that the mother of a 10-year-old girl of Pontian origin had reported that her daughter had boarded the flight with her father against her will. Once the complaint was filed, the police sought to prevent the flight from taking off by informing the control tower, but the flight had already gone. So when the control tower informed the aircraft's pilot, as according to international regulations, the pilot is solely responsible for any decisions taken during flight, so he turned the plane around and brought the little girl back. This is great to see this action being taken. One wonders if the same would have happened if in the situation, say, in Australia, where there have been so many cases of mothers taking off with children in contravention of court orders. But anyway, that's a story where it has happened, and it does show that this is not purely either men or women doing the abducting. It does happen with both sexes, and it is never a legal or a proper thing to do. And there's another article here on 29 June just pointing out that international child abduction is on the increase. This might be partly due to the fact that marriages between couples of different nationalities have become more common over the last few decades. And so international child abduction is following that trend and is on the increase. Travel between countries and continents makes it much easier to abduct children. For people in England, there is England and Wales, there is an authority. It's the International Child Abduction and Contact Unit, and they are the authority responsible for dealing with child abduction in England and Wales. They give some very useful tips if you believe that your child is in danger of being abducted. ICACU advise that you keep the following information, or as much as is possible, ready if you find yourself in this situation. You should have the child's full name available. These are things you probably carry in your head anyway, but make sure you've got ready access, the full name, date and place of birth of the child. You should either have the passport in a safe place, if there is a passport, and if you don't have access to the passport, make sure you keep a note of the number, date and place of issue. Have some photographs, a physical description of the child available, any entitlement to a passport, and with the other parent who you see there being a risk of taking the child, again have the full name of that person, including the maiden name and any aliases if applicable, date and place of birth, passport number, date and place of issue, a photograph or physical description. What their occupation is, probable date of departure, if you've got any idea on that, departure information, like what flight or train or ferry, and if there are any ties to a foreign country, like for instance, if it's your wife or your husband is Japanese, that is a particular concern because Japan is like a black hole for international parental child abduction. And you might like to keep some copies of relevant documents, any agreements or court orders, child birth certificate, marriage certificate or divorce decree, and if you have a solicitor or lawyer appointed, make sure you've got all that on record. It just makes it a lot easier to start on the tracking process to try and find your child if you're in this dreadful situation. Now, just again on this theme, you might find yourself in that situation. Just imagine it: if you drop your child off at school before work, and when you arrive to pick her up in the afternoon, you're told that someone else has already taken her. What do? You wait for your former spouse to return your child following a scheduled weekend visit. Doesn't happen. You go to the other parent's home only to discover that the apartment has been vacated. Now, this scenario is very well presented in a play that's currently on in Sydney at the Belvoir Theatre. It's a play called Old Man, and that is exactly the situation that is covered, where the father wakes up a bit late, checks the house is empty, the clothes cupboards seem to be empty, there's no note, there's no message, but everyone's gone. And the play goes on to develop that. It's excellent play. I don't know, the season may even be sold out, but if people in Sydney have any chance to see that play, Old Man, at the Belvoir Theatre, just take every opportunity you can to see it. Because, look, there are a few horrors that can rival the experience of having one's child kidnapped. And what we're talking about here is the unlawful abduction of a child by one parent, which deprives the other parent of their lawful custody of the child. Now, just some facts on this that might be of interest to people. The characteristics of parental abduction: 73% of parental abductions take place in the child's own home or yard, or in the home or yard of a relative or friend. Children are removed from schools or daycare centres in only 7% of the cases. In 63% of the cases, the children were already with the abductor in lawful circumstances immediately prior to the abduction. So far as police contact, in 40% of cases, the aggrieved parent did not contact the police to report the abduction. And the reason is that the parent who's been deprived of the children usually does not believe that the police will intervene in this matter. If the child is with the parent, what are you worried about? The ages: 45% of abductors were in their 30s, 44% of the abducted children were younger than 6. Now, we might just put a call out now for there's some upcoming programs on Insight on SBS. They particularly want to look at step and blended families. What is it like? How has your life changed? So if you're able to help in this, if you are in or have come from a step or a blended family, perhaps you could send an email to Mawunyo, that's M-A-W-U-N for Norman, Y-O, dot Gbogo, G-B-O-G-B-O, G-B-O-G-B-O, at sbs.com.au. Or you can telephone them on 029-430-3632. And again, they're looking at another program on secrets and lies. If you've been hurt or betrayed by a parent, son or daughter or other family member, and I think there'd be plenty of those people coming out of the family court, Insight is looking for stories where the impact on family has been significant, either financially, emotionally or physically. Was your betrayal unforgivable? If you'd like to share your story with SBS, you could email your contact details and a few lines about your story to Kim, that's K-Y-M-M, at sbs.com.au, K-Y-M-M at sbs.com.au. Now, just a note here, this is another positive note, but we're celebrating the fatherhood pronouncement by the South African Commission for Gender Equality. Unfortunately, we cannot picture the Australian Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission expressing a similar sentiment. But I just might read out what this Commission for Gender Equality in South Africa has said in its homage and respect to fathers. The Commission wishes to extend its sincere appreciation to the fathers of our society as they celebrate Father's Day on Sunday. They celebrated a different day in South Africa. The Commission wishes to salute the fathers who are involved in the raising of the children, and particularly those who are on their own. For those fathers raising their children on their own, this is testimony to the fact that fathers also do care about the future of their children. Father's Day has an important celebratory significance as it reminds us of the role that fatherhood plays in the upbringing of children. This is therefore an opportune moment to encourage all fathers to be proud of the role and status in their households. CGE also pays homage and respect to all responsible fathers who assist their spouses, partners and girlfriend in household chores, including caring for the children. It is also critical that fathers boldly pronounce that the scourge of gender-based violence, sexual harassment, rape cannot continue to take place in their name. Therefore, on this year's occasion of Father's Day, the CGE pays tribute to all fathers in the country. So it's nice to get that tribute. Unfortunately, what tends to happen in Australia and the US is that the political leaders choose Father's Day to make some comment critical of fathers with the extraordinary timing. We might now go to another music break, and before we come back with our first guest today, when we'll be speaking with Rick Welsh, this song we're going to be playing now is from Jeffrey Gurumol Yunupingu from the Rakala album. He's got an English translation with the album, and it starts off where saltwater people, coconuts abound, the seas are calm here at Gawelku. Oh, young men, oh, young men, they went off by boat looking for turtles. The sunset clouds are brilliant red for them over the island. Oh, young men, strong wind arrived there at the deep water. Oh, you poor young men, who will help them? We will be talking to a saltwater man a little bit later in the show, but in the meantime, this is Jeffrey Gurumol.
Yeah.
And that was the song translated as Young Men by Jeffrey Gurumul Yunupingu from the Rakala album. And it's translated as We're Saltwater People. It's got a really wonderful voice. And we're now going to be going to our first guest, who is Rick Welsh. Rick is the project officer for the Men's Health Information and Resource Centre at UWS. He's a manager of The Shed based at Emerton and involved in the Sydney Regional Aboriginal Men's Network. Rick, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Well, thank you, Rick. We'll just see if we can turn that volume up. Yeah, Rick, now I think you're a Goomerai man, is that correct?
Yes, from northwestern New South Wales.
From northwestern New South Wales. Okay, now Rick, you've got a strong interest in men's issues. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about how you came to be involved with these men's issues.
Well, actually, it's a bit of a personal story because a lot of the things that I'm trying to help men with at the moment is something that I went through myself. I went through a family breakdown. I've been through depression.
Yeah.
And I think that, and at the point that all happened, I felt really isolated. There was no support services for men, and there was really nowhere for me to turn to. And being the youngest child of eight,
yes,
I do have a lot of family around me, but I think at those times when I was going through a family breakdown, I still felt very isolated and, didn't know which way to turn. So I think that's one of the main reasons that I've really got a strong interest in trying to support other men and other families through their endeavours, particularly with the family breakdown,
Yeah, so you
there's a lot of it about the causation, about trying to address causation of family breakdown.
Yes. So you found you needed something more than just that, that strong family of eight. Are you a close family, do you think, with your eight brothers and sisters?
Oh, yeah, very close family. I was the youngest, so at the time that I was going through a lot of it, my older brothers and sisters had families and a lot of their own, children, older children and stuff, so they had to focus a lot on their own families as well.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm basically, 4 or 5 years older than my oldest niece.
Mm.
I was pretty much close to a lot of my nieces and nephews than I was to a lot of my older brothers and sisters. There's something like a 20-year age gap between me and my older sister.
Yes, and now I think you mentioned your father was part of the Stolen Generation.
Yeah, my father was actually stolen. He'd been taken from a community in Western New South Wales, or an Aboriginal mission at that point, which was called Denewan. And basically the reasons why he was taken is that they were, my father would be close to the 90 or maybe a bit over. And what happened with him is that he was basically, they were heading into town with his mother and father, and this sort of wasn't too many cars floating around at that point. So they was on a horse and sulky, and they were heading into town, and my father was about 6 years old. He'd fell off the side of the sulky and the wheel, the big heavy cart, the wheel had run over and broke his shin. So they put him back in and kept going into town to the hospital. So that when they got the hospital, he was taken from the hospital and put into sent to Sydney. And then he'd never seen his family for about another 20 years. So that's the basis that he was stolen on. He'd broken his leg. They went down to Sydney for some treatment. From there, he went to Kinchula Boys Home, which was based up at South West Rocks in northern New South Wales, or central north New South Wales. And he'd never seen his family for an extended period of time.
Oh, the poor little fellow, you can just imagine at six he's got a broken leg and he can't even see his family. It must have been dreadful.
Yeah, that's right.
But he did later get back to his family, did he, after that 20 years?
Yeah, he did go back to them, but, I think that a lot of it was pretty difficult to try and re-establish and rebuild some of the relationships with his sisters and brother.
Yeah.
I did grow up and I did know all of my cousins in terms of my dad's side of the family. But I think it's definitely something my father's never gotten over. I suppose for those people that's lucky enough to... like my children, where they're lucky enough to be in contact with their dads and mums and let them know that they're loved. And because love wasn't something that they were shown in the homes when they were placed in there,
No, and...
It was pretty common for the things like abuse and physical, emotional abuse. And even in some circumstances, there was sexual abuse in those homes.
Yes, it's all starting to come out now, isn't it? But So your children now, I think you've got four children?
Yep, I've got four children. I've got three to my first relationship, and I've just got another little beautiful baby girl, Clara, who is 13 weeks old.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And those children, they have the opportunity to meet their grandparents and, and that extended family now, I hope.
Oh, definitely. Mm. Yes, they have definitely have good relationships with their family.
Rick, when you found out there was no one to help you when you were going through the hard times, what led you to get it? I mean, what did you do when you found there was nothing?
I went through a bout of depression, one of the things that helped me a lot is that my eldest daughter Nadu had chosen to stay with me through all of this, all of the happenings that went on. So I think that a lot of that, having her around, kept me grounded a lot. Mm. I was somebody who'd worked in federal government and state government, and later I moved into working with Aboriginal community controlled organisations. And I think that it was an opportunity that I got to go and work with the Men's Health Information Resource Centre at the University of Western Sydney. From joining there, I'd end up being lucky enough to get the position as a coordinator at the shed as well. So I worked 4 days at the shed, and one day, which is a UWS project that's based in Emerton at Western Sydney, so a stone's throw away from Mount Druitt. So I work 1 day a week with the Men's Health Information Resource Centre, in which we do a fair bit with the Sydney Regional Aboriginal Men's Network, which is basically made up of all of the Aboriginal men's groups that are based across Sydney.
So the shed that you're talking about, that's at Mount Druitt, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. That's Mount Druitt. And Mount Druitt, what the shed is really is, it's an Aboriginal male targeted suicide prevention project. But because I'm Aboriginal and we definitely target Aboriginal males as our primary group, but we do support other people that come along there.
So it sounds as though it's a bit different from the most of the sheds, where it's really, I suppose, for people, for older men who've retired, and they're looking for some social interaction. But yours seems to be targeted particularly at Aboriginal men and at perhaps suicide prevention.
Yeah, that's right. So we're a little bit different. It's been established. I think the shed itself has been there for about 7 or 8 years now. The shed movement that's established, which is great, they do things a little bit different to us. We sort of get in and develop strong partnerships with other agencies and services, because what we try to do, what our main aim is, to look at things that can impact on suicide, because not all people commit or attempt suicide for any one particular reason. So we do it in a model that's based around the social determinants of health, by making sure that, or assisting people to get homes to live in and to help to address their debt. We get legal, we get solicitors. We've got good partnerships with Legal Aid New South Wales. So we'd look to address all the things that can impact on people's well-being.
Well, that's great. But if someone comes in and says they're feeling suicidal, how do you know what to say to them? I mean, you wouldn't want to say the wrong thing and create a worse situation, I'm sure.
To explain it, there's only really two staff that we have. We average about 400 to 500 contacts a month. But when we do get people that come through the door, and it's mostly guys, we'll sit down and talk to them, and ask them about what's going on and, why are they feeling the way that they are. Mm. A lot of the time, particularly with the men, they'll say that's because they've had a family breakdown, or they're homeless, or, they haven't seen... because of the family breakdown, they haven't seen their kids for extended periods of time. So it has a lot of mental and physical impacts on individuals.
Yes.
So we generally just sit down and try, we'll engage the clients and sit down and triage with them to find out what's going on and what's causing the problems in their lives, and we seek to we aim to address what's going on with them.
And I presume you discourage them from self-medicating, by drugs or alcohol.
Yeah, that's right. So that's what we ask. We ask if they've been doing any drinking or taking drugs or anything like that there, because we do have some great partnerships with other agencies. So we've got the Centre of Addictive Medicine out there. And we use a mental health service that's attached to Blacktown Hospital. So we do those referrals as well. So, you know, if guys indicate that they're drinking or they've got problems and they've got depression and stuff, we'll make the appropriate referrals. And we're lucky enough to have all of those services actually do outreach to the shed.
Mm.
So it's not a matter of just sort of giving somebody a card and saying, oh, you know, give these guys a call.
Yeah.
It's much better that we have the staff from all these different agencies come out so they can actually meet people and see people, you know. So we don't like, you know, we don't want people working with numbers. We want people working with people.
Yes.
You know, and if they engage, if they come out to the shed and they engage with the clients, it's a lot better. There's more likely to, you know, the clients are more likely to stay engaged as well.
Yeah, so
we've got a good feeling at the shed. You know, it's a good bloke's place. They can come in and grab a cuppa any time and sit down. And you know, we get a few guys who come in there regularly. Which is good because they also bring other. So they also bring other men back who has problems.
Yes.
So we do get a good feeling there. You know, it's not the Taj Mahal by any means, but people do come there. They can come and drop in for a cuppa at any, you know, any day of the week. We're open Mondays to Fridays.
Mm-hmm. And it must be good for you, you know, being a proud Goomerai man to be still to be working with your community out there.
Oh, definitely. You know, I think that it's definitely rewarding, personally satisfying, definitely, to be able to help other Aboriginal men, you know, and other men also in need, not just Aboriginal men.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we face, you know, a lot of us can face the same challenges to some extent. You know, and an Aboriginal man as well as other men also, you know, love their children and they go through hard times in life. So they need to look at getting support, you know, that social support as well as all the other things that they need to help address problems in their lives.
Yes, and that's particular interest to us here is the family law situation which you mentioned. And So, you know, what do you give the men much hope when they come to you and say, you know, I can't see my children?
Well, we're lucky enough to have a family legal aid in New South Wales have a fantastic unit for family law, which is called an early intervention unit. And what it is, it aims to try and help or assist people at the earliest possible stage when they're going through a family breakdown to, you know, to develop parenting plans and stuff like that. Because one of the things, we actually run an Aboriginal family law conference in Sydney this year, earlier in March.
Yeah.
And it was a 3-day conference. So we looked at, because I think one of the things, particularly with Aboriginal people, is that there's not a great wealth of knowledge around family law. And it's good that, I suppose it's good in that what it is we aim to educate Aboriginal people about what their actual rights are when it comes to family law, you know, because there's big disparities when things like AVOs are taking out, the apprehended violence orders are taken out on people, and it can really limit people's ability to link with their children, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And I suppose, yes, finding out something about the court system would be a great advantage because I can imagine there'd be a lot of resistance, particularly people that have, like yourself, have come from a family that was part of the stolen generation. You'd bring back too many memories, I'm sure.
Yeah. So one of the other things that we've done with Legal Aid New South Wales is that we've partnered up to do a pilot project in Mount Druitt Local Court. It's the Mount Druitt AVA pilot project. And basically what it is that the Legal Aid have committed a criminal law solicitor and some family law solicitors to the project. So what they do is they'll deal with the, you know, I suppose in supporting defendants, which can be male or female, but to support defendants with the apprehended violence orders, which a lot of the time are domestic violence orders. We were lucky enough to have, at one point, we had the Family Law Early Intervention Unit there who were able to get between the Family Law Intervention or the Early Intervention Unit and the Women's Domestic Violence Court Assistance Scheme or WDV-CAS, we were able to get, you know, if AVOs were gone into place or put in place, that people would still be able to get parenting plan, so there was still access, continued access by both families to the children. And what the shed done is, as a part of the pilot, we've taken in some of the other services to the court. So we're basically set up in Mount Druitt Court on a Monday. We're in courtroom 3, and we get a lot of the other, you know, mental health services, housing service, drug and alcohol service. We get Centrelink to come out. We get probation and parole, so we can sort of do on the spot referrals and link people to the services that they need, because a lot of the time people don't know what actual services are out there to support them.
Yes.
So we managed to take them in there, and we're actually getting some fantastic results from the pilot project.
Oh, that's really encouraging. And what would you see as the biggest problem for your community out there in Mount Druitt?
I think you could really nail it down to any one particular problem. You know, you can look at the volumes of apprehended violence orders that's going out. You know, and there's also the prevalence of homelessness amongst men. You know, the financial situations of guys out there, because, you know, if there is things like a family breakdown, a lot of the time you've still got to, just because there's a family breakdown doesn't release you from any debts or financial commitments that you have. So I don't think you could really nail it down to any one particular thing. I think it takes a lot of different issues into it.
Yes. And how do you deal with the homeless people, or they've had a family law breakdown, they suddenly find they're homeless? How can you help them?
Oh, well, we've got some good community or social housing services out there. So we've got Mission Australia, as well as Department of Housing, to come to the shed. So what we can do is refer to a lot of those guys on and make sure that they're, you know, activated, if they're eligible, that they're activated in the Housing New South Wales system. And, you know, we can link them guys to getting some accommodation.
Yep.
There's a lot of couch surfing that goes on in, I'm sure, in a lot of communities, but, you know, it's definitely one of the prevalent problems in the Mount Druitt area.
So by that you mean they just go around to a friend's place for a night or two, then go to another friend's place and just sort of work their way around?
Yeah, and one of the issues with that too is it can have implications in terms of families, because, you know, they won't, a lot of the time the agreements won't be made if people are homeless. You know, you can't take your kids over and spend, you know, the quality time with them that you'd like. So what we do is do a lot of advocating for guys to get into homes so that you can also help have contact with their children. And we have some great success stories out there where, you know, guys have, who are living in things like garages and cars and stuff, who've managed to get into housing and now have good relationships and see their children very regularly, you know, spend weekends with them because they've got somewhere to stay. And so it can be, you know, those things that a lot of people can look at as small things are actually very important to a lot of people.
Yes. Yes. Now, you mentioned also you're involved with the Sydney Aboriginal Men's Network. What does that actually involve?
Well, what it is, we've done a partnership between all of the Aboriginal men's groups across Sydney. So we've got, you know, there's basically five Aboriginal, you know, you'd almost say designated Aboriginal communities across Sydney, which are at Redfern, La Perouse, Mount Druitt, Campbelltown, down in the Illawarra. So what we've done is, we know that for a long time there's been Aboriginal men's groups established, and so we've managed to get all of them together to develop a partnership in what, you know, I suppose we can look at what things are across Sydney and what, you know, they've got some different, or some Aboriginal men's groups target different things. You know, some of them target mental health specifically. So what we do is brought them all together to try and find out, or try and get some clarity around an approach to the government and different services to find out, you know, what we can do and better ways of approach, or getting the Aboriginal men's groups to identify a lot of the key issues within their own communities. Yeah. And that's by us working together and, you know, really talking to government at state and federal levels about what's out there and what our needs are, you know, that, you know, there's a lot of support out there.
I think that's a definite improvement, because you're getting the input then from the elders, I presume. And
yeah, definitely.
So they're saying, you know, this is what we need to do, and you know, and this is our cultural background. I imagine you know, that it'd be important to instill in the younger people that what their cultural background is.
Yeah, definitely. And it's good for us to work together because a lot of the Aboriginal men's groups, or all of the Aboriginal men's groups, don't sort of specifically target age groups or, you know, they've got all the generations involved. You can go along to the Aboriginal men's groups, you know, there's dad and there's the grandfather and the grandkids, and so they're not sort of targeted really at any one specific group.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the thing, you know, culturally, a lot of it's about trying to learn from elders and that as well. You know, we've got to sit down and we've got to listen to our elders.
And
because a lot of the time they could face the challenges that we're going to, you know, end up facing in our own lives.
Yes, they've already been there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and do you ever organise to take the younger ones out into the bush to you know, get away from the city?
Oh, yeah, well, we've definitely done some camps and worked with a few different agencies where we've taken, you know, some of the younger blokes out. You know, we generally go out to Pilliga or the Pilliga Scrub in western New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
We do some cultural camps and things out there. We go and see some of the sites and look at some of the bush foods and, you know, some of the local cultural things that are in those areas. So we also do, when it's warmer months, from the shed, we'll do trips out to some of the national parks, like West Head out at Pittwater and that, to go out and look at the national parks out there. We do day trips, and they've got Aboriginal discovery rangers out there, so they've got some Aboriginal rangers working in the different national parks. And it's good to link up with those guys, and the guy in West Head National Parks, a proud Yuin Aboriginal man from the South Coast, a guy named Les McLeod, and
yes,
he does a fantastic job out there. And he goes out and he'll look at, you know, show you some of the Aboriginal sites out there and try some of the local foods and explain what some of those sites mean as well.
Yeah, look, that must be great. It's you know, look, it's really inspiring stuff what you're doing, Rick, and it's you're getting the support, I gather, through from the University of Western Sydney, from John McDonald, Professor John McDonald.
Yes.
He was on our
pleasure
program, right?
Working with John McDonald out there.
Yep. He was on our program last week, so if he's listening, we'll say hello to Professor McDonald. Look, Rick, it's fantastic hearing all these stories. It really makes me feel good to hear all this going on. But we're running out of time, and we've just wanted to go now to your choice of song. We're going to run with the choice you made from Charlie Trindle. A song called When Angels Fall. Now, does that mean something special to you?
I think it's good because it can, you know, I know Charlie personally, and I think it's good that people can sing about the things that they've gone through in their own lives and the challenges that they face in life. You know, it's not everything's pretty, but, you know, what we can do to help overcome those obstacles that we face.
He's one of the great Indigenous singers that's out there at the moment. They're really putting some good stuff together, so... We might go to Charlie sing his song. It's a song called When Angels Fall. And Rick, could I thank you very much for being on the program, and we wish you all the best with that important work you're doing, and have a happy NIDOC week.
Thank you. And you too, Bill.
Thanks, Rick.
Bye. Chance to take my rise. Years later, down a rocky road, got my own kind of burdens, my own heavy loads. I made it this far, and that's a fact. Faced with my future, 'cause there ain't no turning back. I never really got to know my old man. He left when I was young, that made me kinda sad. Today, looking out at my own kids' lives, it's hard to sleep lying on those knives. It cuts your heart and it's hard to breathe when you realize it's been the same old scene. What could we see? What we're doing to each other when our lives are filled with loss and mystery? And if we try just to look that little harder, you'll see when angels fall, some they tend to grieve. They say money makes the world go round. I've gotta argue that because I've been down. Love and family, we just wanna belong. At the heart of it all, we all singing the same song. Young or old, white or black, it don't make no difference, 'cause we're walking the same track. What could we see? What we're doing to each other when our lives are filled with loss and mystery?
try just to look that little harder. You see, when angels fall, some they tend to grieve. Empowered, and every day a baby's born, it's a mixed up story with some lives torn. And from that day they're blessed or cursed, 10 times lucky or 10 times worse. Why can't we see what we're doing to each other when our lives are filled with loss and mystery? And if we try just to look that little harder, you'll see when angels fall, some they tend to grieve. What can't we see? 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 What we're doing to each other when our lives.
Singing the same song.
What can't we see? What we're doing to each other when our lives are filled with loss and mystery?
I never really got to know my old man.
But if we tried just to look at
behind the wheel, promoting road safety to drivers in rural and regional Australia, thanks to the support of NRMA.
With Dads on the Air, we're here 'cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're Dads on the Air. We're back, we're Dads on the Air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air this third day of July 2012. And our next guest is Uncle Gerald Brown, or Uncle G, as we know him. Uncle G was a NIDOC Award winner for 2010 when he was awarded Aboriginal Elder of the Year. He's a proud Yuin male and chairperson of the Illawarra Koori Men's Support Group. Uncle G, are you there?
Yeah, I am, Bill.
Oh, not too bad, thank you. Great to hear your voice.
Thank you.
So, Uncle G, you've been involved in a number of programs. Oh, look, before I ask you that, I might just mention you're a saltwater person, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, I am, brother. I'm a Yuin warrior, mate.
Well, a little bit earlier, we played a song by Jeffrey Gurumal, from his Rakala album, and it starts off, "We're Saltwater People." So that was a song dedicated to you.
Good on you. Thank you.
So now, Uncle G, you've been involved in a number of programs. One of them is the Brothers Against Domestic Violence program, and you've got a few others that I'm hoping you might be able to tell us a little bit about as we go into NIDOC week.
Yeah, for sure. Which one would you want me to speak about?
Well, let's start with the Brothers Against Domestic Violence program.
Yeah, the Brothers Against Domestic Violence program. Yeah, we established the program in 2006. Yep. We received a bit of funding from Heri Assistance Scheme, as it was called at the time. It's now Community Builder. We employed a facility manager of that program. We got funding for 3 years. Unfortunately, like all Koori funding, it runs out.
Yeah.
And we're struggling with it now. We've put out a few feelers for some. We've been putting them out all the time, but we've been struggling for funds. What it is, it's run on the basis of appropriate Koori cultural healing type of program, where we come together and we sit in a circle and the boys go through their good news and bad news types of things for the week, which is really interesting sometimes.
Yeah, I bet it is.
Really sad, and when you hear the full stories of some of our brothers out there, that's why it's called Brothers Against Domestic Violence.
And we often hear that domestic violence is a particular problem in the Indigenous community. Is that something that it's prevalent in the communities you deal with?
Well, it's always going to be there, whether it's Indigenous or non-Indigenous, brother.
Yeah.
We take facts and figures on the Indigenous one. That's why that's what we're concerned with, with our brothers out there. But it is a big wide thing with domestic violence. And that's how we became involved in.
And do you see a lot of men come in who've been a victim of domestic violence from their female partners as well?
Yeah. Mm. That's one of the things that we do not take a lot of notice of. And in the Indigenous community, like anyone who's Indigenous would know, it's all grog related.
Mm.
All comes through grog. Females and males, they get together for a while and they've got families and they go drinking, and next thing you know, one of them being AVOs against them, and it keeps coming back all the time.
Starts down that path. So presumably you try and discourage the excessive use of alcohol.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have a drugs and alcohol worker from Hairy Health that comes. That's our local health centre that come along and work with our guys. Sometimes we get some drug and alcohol workers comes along from the local AMS. But the Hairy Health one is the big one where we can get our guys in to get some help, and a lot of them come from broken families, which is I didn't realise till we started the program itself, and I find a lot that the stable parents, the guys are stable.
Mm.
I don't know if that makes sense or not, but that's what I get out of it.
Yeah, so one of the starting points is to have a stable family, and you think that will sort of keep you on the right track if you've got.
Oh,
that
yeah,
program.
For sure, mate, for sure, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think there are particular problems with the Indigenous things that you have to address with that perhaps the general community it's more pronounced in the Indigenous community than in the general community?
Look, it just goes back to what I just said, about having a stable family.
Yeah.
I found it, a lot of the guys that are involved in domestic violence, it's a generic type of thing. It comes from their parents. I've noticed that if the parents, like I said, are stable, but these days lately it seems to be a lot of a fair bit of drugs and alcohol and stuff out there, a lot of those issues, so that's where a fair bit of it's coming from.
Yeah, it's really a problem in the whole community, isn't it? That
Yeah, it is. I work closely with the Gunjis, the police down this way. And, their reports are the same, that I only concentrate on the Koori stuff, that's all.
Yeah. Now, you in the Illawarra, which you're based in the Illawarra, I think, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, we are Illawarra, yeah.
Now, you've got another program is the Illawarra Aboriginal Men's Physical Health and Training Program.
Yeah, that's a program, that's a health program for our health and fitness program for our elders.
Oh, for the elders. Oh, that's good to hear.
Elders.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And what we do, we get together every Thursday,
mm-hmm.
And we get a health worker that comes along and does all our blood observations, make sure our glucose level is right, and any chronic illness that we've got or diabetes and stuff, they work with us on diabetes. And it's a really, really great program, and a few of the other men's group are going along the same lines now.
Mm.
And a lot of it is to do with the social stuff as well. We've been running for about 5 years with that as well. And the noticeable thing about that is all our men getting the social stuff out of it. There's a lot of elders that are there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Uncle G, you're an elder.
Yeah.
Could you just explain to me what it means to be an elder? Like, I'm 61, you're 65, I think.
Yeah.
But it's not just a matter of age. I presume there are other things involved before you're accepted as an elder?
Yeah, well, I've been an elder since I retired from work when I was 55. And I always thought myself as just a 55-year-old male. But you realise after a while that people are coming to you for advice. Say, oh, you've been on this earth longer than what I have, and Uncle, can you know, you've probably been through these issues before, can you work with us? And yeah, and I've been like an elder since I was 55, and I thought that was young at the time, but everybody, you know, said, oh no, that's what we want. Well, they made me an elder. And as you know yourself, you're probably going to get the same.
I don't know about that, but so it's really a community thing. They sort of appoint you as an elder, is that what happens?
Yeah, they do, yeah. They just, yeah. You go to a meeting anywhere and they say, oh, we'd like to, if I go with anyone, they say, we'd like to announce one of our elders that are here with us today, and it's Uncle Gerald or Uncle G. They all call me down here as Uncle G.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, even the mainstream people know me as Uncle G, so I've been an elder for a long time, and I do a lot of community stuff as well, see, and a lot of mentoring with our guys, the young fellas, come to the men's group, so, yeah.
Yeah, well, look, you've been very well recognised. As I mentioned before, you were the NIDOC Award winner for 2010 as the Aboriginal Elder of the Year, and is that an Australia-wide award?
Oh, no, that's the Illawarra Award, that one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, and I was so pleased to finally get some recognition. I don't normally go head hunting for recognition, but, you know, our Aboriginal elders, our people, they don't get recognised enough in the community.
No.
You see, you go out and I see people from down this way getting orders of Australia, and really they say, oh, they're volunteers, and they may drive a bus with about people on for 5 days a week, and you know, that's a good thing as well, but they're not putting a lot back into the community just by looking after those five people.
No, that's right. I'm all for it. We should be recognising the people that are contributing to their communities in the way you are, and we spoke earlier with Rick Welsh, who's also doing some wonderful work in...
Oh, yeah, Rick, community. Yeah, he's a good guy, eh? Yeah.
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 Now, I guess as part of your elder responsibilities, were you involved with the Koori Men's Health Day in Nowra recently?
Yeah, I was there, eh? Yep. Yeah. Okay.
And how did that go?
Oh, brilliant, mate, brilliant. I think there was close to 100 guys there. We went down, took a busload of our older people and younger people down here, because we don't only, our men's group doesn't only deal with elders or anything like that. We get young guys that are getting in the stripe at school now. We get them over Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we've been getting 19 of those. They're all young Koori fellas, and best on the edge of getting suspended from school. So we work with them, do mentoring and stuff with them.
Yes.
And try to keep them on the right track.
And try to keep them going to school, because sometimes the truancy can be a problem, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, this is where... Look, the cream comes to the top with our group. They come to our group on the Fridays, and we do cultural stuff with them, like we do some paint, some artwork, some leather work, and all those types of things. We've had them out there. We've taught them how to start lawnmowers, which a lot of them come to us at 16 years of age and didn't even know how to turn a lawnmower on.
Yeah.
And we've also do programs with them. We just finished a 4-week program of learn them how to cook properly, you know.
Yeah.
And we went to, we had 19 guys, and that we taught them all of it. They can go home now. And the feedback coming from their parents is they don't have to worry about them now. Some of the guys have gone home and said, Mum and Dad, you sit down, and I'm making tea for you tonight. Shocked and blew them away, eh?
Yeah, look, that's great. Yeah. Me very popular.
And with it too is one of our main things is with us, our group down here, we're hygienic. When we first got together, we used to, have a barbecue lunch on the Friday, and one of the health workers said to me one day, he just goes, "Uncle G, there's only one thing missing from this group." And so what are you talking about, brother? We get a feed every Friday, sausage sandwiches or something. And he goes, "Yeah, but I'm an health worker." He said, "I can see the mistake." He said, "When we come here, no one washes their hands for dinner."
Mm.
And I said, "Oh, yeah, that's right, eh?"
Mm.
I went out the very next day and I bought a small dish for everyone to wash their hands. Now we've only had one guy that wouldn't eat when I told him, "You know, go wash your hands, brother, like everyone else." And he said, "I've washed mine." He said, "But look, there's a little dish here." I said, "Everyone sitting at the table, just do it."
Mm.
He threw the bread on the table. "I know, wash this." I said, well, we can't let you eat any food. And it's a standard thing now. As soon as the food's put on the table, someone goes, don't have to ask anybody.
Yeah.
Someone just goes, grabs a dish and a towel, come out, a bit of soap in it, wash your hands, you know.
Yeah, it's it's amazing how you can miss out on things like that. And, you know, you're now reintroducing it and getting them to do, as you say, look, you know, if they don't know how to start a lawnmower, they can get into the wrong type of activities. And I think I was going to mention another program. You've got the SKIP program. And I think that's for youth anger management.
Yeah, the SKIP program is a School Kids Indigenous Peer Program.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does, we've got a facilitator for it. And when we had the Bad V program run up, him and I sat down one day last year, and he goes to me, "Uncle G," he says, "I think we might be able to bring this down to more primary school kids, boys." And I said, "Oh, well, let's run a, do a pilot project on it for 10 weeks. So we did that. We used a bit of the funding and raised some money through barbecues and that. So we ran that for 10 weeks. But our big mistake at the time was we didn't realise till we got it going was we had too many boys involved in it.
Mm.
I think we had 14 boys involved in it the first time. And when we went through to school, and what we do now, we run it for one term at a time. We've got our schools cut into sections type of thing, down first south coast and then middle of Illawarra and north Illawarra and sideburns of Illawarra, you know. And we've run we've just finished last week, the last term. So we've had one of the programs every term this year, and we're starting a new one when the kids come back. But it's all about anger management. The kids are getting in trouble at school. A lot of Koori kids, they just can't control their anger. It's frustrating for them because, I don't know if you know much of, well, if you say you're 60 years old, you'd know you'd have grandkids and you know the frustrations at the schools. We're finding a lot of our young kids are getting suspended for 3 or 4 weeks, you know, for swearing in us or dropping a ball or, you know, just petty stuff, I believe, anyway.
Yeah. Absolutely, and they're missing out on all that education, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
So, well, that's and this is at a primary school level.
At a primary school level. Yeah.
So, when you get a child referred to you like that, how do you deal with it?
Sorry.
When you get a child referred to you that has these anger management problems, what does the program actually involve?
Well, it's a lot of cultural stuff and teaching them respect and admiration for their elders, you know, respect their elders at all times.
Yes.
And coming into, if I go there and they listen to everything that I've got to talk, and some of the other elders too. We've got a couple other elders, Uncle Salty, Albert Ralph, he comes along and he does a lot of great stuff. Uncle Seth Ingram, Uncle Alex Trindle, and we sit down with them and, you know, we say, look, we didn't have the opportunity what you did for education. You need to, you know, get your finger out and get into education.
Yep.
And that's the type of stuff we do with the boys from the high school as well.
Mm.
We tell them, you know, if you get suspended from school, you can't come over here.
Mm.
We tell them, you go to school 4 days a week, you get the cream of the day and you come with us on the Fridays. And we do stuff, we take them fishing and stuff like that and take them for walks and stuff and do cultural issues with them.
Yeah, so it's sort of or man to boy or man to man, you know, you can you talk to them differently than perhaps they might at home with their mother.
Yeah. A lot of these fellows that, you know, that come with us, well, to our men's group, you know, they don't have a good, well, I'm not going to say good, they, some of them don't have an older male figure in their life.
Yes.
Broken marriages and stuff like that. So I think we're filling in the spaces there for them.
Yeah. Do you get involved in any mentoring type activities where, you know, someone might be assigned to a particular boy to look after him?
Yeah, we do, but we don't have them one-on-one. We have to realise that mainstream Australia is there watching. So with our code of conduct and stuff like that, we don't allow man-on-boy mentoring and stuff like that. There's got to be two or three in the group at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to protect ourselves, that's all.
Yeah, look, that'd be the last thing you'd want to happen.
Yeah.
And you mentioned something about the culture. I think you've got a cultural group that meets fairly frequently as well.
Yeah, we do. We meet every Friday and we pull out stuff. And we don't do it every Friday because we don't want to make them feel like they're back at school and saying, you know, you go to school for 4 days, you come in, you go back to school again on the fifth day. We change it around all the time. We might only have one of those cultural days once a month or, you know, something like that. Yeah, so we don't want to put them in a situation where it gets boring. Not boring, but they go to school.
Yeah.
And they're acting fine at school. And in saying that as well, like some of our guys that get suspended from school, they get suspended for 3 or 4 weeks. Unbelievable,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
And I look at that and I think, well, I don't want you sitting around out on the streets and doing nothing, so I bring them over. I don't advertise it a real lot, but I've had a few boys come to men's group and they do get homework from my high school, whatever they're in, and they'll come and when they finish that on the day, they stay there from 9:30 till 2 o'clock. And they're suspended from school, so they'll do their school work. And then they'll jump in and start working around our house because we've got a big place where we are.
Yeah, well, that's good, productive stuff. And have you spoken to the principals of the schools about this and that this is causing damage by suspending them for 3 to 4 weeks?
Oh, yeah. Everybody, you know, males and females, because we do a lot of stuff at the schools. I've sort of been trained up on the no gaps, no excuse, go into the schools and talk to the teachers about, you know, I don't know if you know about the module itself.
No, perhaps you tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, I did the first module down here, and they sitting on the blackboard, and you know, they said, look, see this period here, it was in the middle of last year. They said we can't understand why all these Indigenous kids haven't been at school for. I said, what you fellas don't understand? I said, Koi kids are different to mainstream. I said, how do you work that out? And I said, well, I'll tell you. See, one of those, they had like a graph on it, and we just went right to the bottom. I said, see that day there? You go back and you check that. I said, that's when one of our elders passed away. And she was respected in this community. I said, so every single kid that knew her went to that funeral. Every single Koi kid that knew her went to that funeral.
Yep.
And I said, what you don't understand, too, I said, with speaking properly now, with black fellows, I said, when one of their elders dies, they start up at down Eden, they've got to go for a week, or up Kempsey, or anywhere up there, they've got to go for a week, and that's how long it takes them to travel, so they're out of school for a week, not for, you know, like the mainstream, they don't just go across the funeral one day and come back the next day, I said, you know. That shows what our community's like.
Yes.
Like they understood it when I showed it to them. I said, this is how it goes.
Yeah.
That's what happened with Koorish. We just all go to funerals.
There are big cultural issues. And we're speaking with Uncle Gerald Brown, who's a Yuin male and chairperson of the Illawarra Koori Men's Support Group. So do you have any programs on the drawing board at the moment, Uncle G, you got new ones coming up?
Oh no, we're doing our NAIDOC stuff this year again.
Yep.
What we do in the Illawarra, the men, we have an indoor bowls day, like lawn bowls.
Mm-hmm.
We've been having that since 2005. So we have that every year. It's an annual event for us, and we invite community along. We get some funding and pay for food and all that. And
that sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, it is. It is. None of us know how to play. And, we just get up there and roll the ball around and just really enjoy it. Eh? Everybody has a great day.
Look, it's great. I mean, you're doing the serious stuff, the health stuff, the programs for the violence for children, anger management for children, the domestic violence. You've got a nice mix of having fun things as well as serious things.
Yeah, we got good things. And what I'll tell you, one of our story, like we first started this bowls day off, like I said, 2005, somewhere around that time, and we worked down to the local bowling club down there. They've got an indoor lawn bowl, what they call it, a rink. And I rang the guy up and I said, oh, we're the Koori men's group. Can we come down and use the facilities? And he said, yeah, come down. And I went down and spoke to him. I said, oh, look, Rocky. I said, we are drug and alcohol-free mob, so there'll be no one drinking on the day. And he was, what? And I said, no drinkers. And he... But anyway, we got down there on the day, and he's got three barmaids behind the bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was 51 Kooris down there, males and females, and he couldn't believe that 51 Kooris would walk into that club and walk out without having a beer.
Yeah.
was a big thing now that we go down there. They've only got one behind the bar, and he's there to serve our soft drinks.
We're all living and learning.
That story, I always tell that story. Eh?
That's a good one. Well, Uncle G, we've run out of time, unfortunately. We want to go. We want to go to your song selection.
Right out.
It's. Do you mind to just mention the name of the song?
Yeah, I believe this is for all my brothers, my father, and my own brothers, and all the brothers in the community. You know, I'm not sure the name of the song, but I know that. Going like he ain't heavy, he's my brother.
That's the title, and it's a great song, and we'll run with that. So Uncle Gerald Brown, thank you very much for being on the show, and all the best in all the great work you're doing.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Uncle G.
Knows where. It's a long, long road.
my brother.
The show for this week with Dad's on the Air. We want to thank our guests. Our special guests today were Rick Welsh and Uncle Gerald Brown.